Welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. My name is Pastor Paul Androlonis, and I'm joined by Pastor Justin Schaller here in the studio. Today, we'll be talking about contentment and covetousness. And I think this idea, you know, these two words, contentment and covetousness, are important for us. And I think it's a, you know, we'll have a great conversation as we talk about these things and how they impact us as believers, but just impact us as human beings, you know, thinking about interacting with other people, interacting in our lives, and how we handle not having certain things, other people having those things, and how I can relate to those people and how I can connect with those people and how we live our lives knowing that some people have things that I don't have and being content in what I do have and what God has given to me. And I think, you know, when we talk about contentment and covetousness, maybe we can talk about covetousness first, just thinking about what it is and why I feel that way. And I think in some ways it starts with me. I look at what I have and I look at what other people have and I see the disparity maybe between what I have and what other people have, you know, and it can cause maybe some angst. It can cause me to think a certain way about somebody, but also it can cause me to think a certain way about myself too. Like, I don't have these things and that other person does, and I want what they have. And how do our relationships shift based on those viewpoints that I have of myself and other people? So yeah, maybe we can talk about that. What are your thoughts on covetousness, or what are you thinking about covetousness?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great subject. Contentment, everybody wants to be content. And I think in the Western world, contentment comes a lot of times through achievement, success, through gaining things that I don't actually have right now and going after certain things. And as believers, we're commissioned to be content people. It's something that we're growing in, where much of life is based upon what we see and what we own and what we have and what we experience in the material world.
Yeah.
When you become a follower of Jesus, the things on the outside should, I mean, this is really what it means, that the inner life is much more important than the outer life. And Jesus talked a lot about money. He talked a lot about material things. And then he also warned many times, just in the sense that if your life consists of things, you're missing the whole point. Life doesn't consist of things. It really consists of your inner life, your spiritual life. So this subject of coveting things, covetousness, we see it in the Ten Commandments, that thou shalt not covet. So maybe we can define what that is. I would say just right off the bat that when we talk about sin, we can talk about so many outward things, and people can, you know, confess, hey, I struggle with this area or that area or whatever it might be, but you don't really necessarily hear people say that I struggle with coveting.
Yeah.
But I believe that it's in all of our hearts. It's really something that's a motivation that's in all of us, that we see something that we don't have and we want it. And we have to make a distinction as well, in the sense that desire and coveting are two different things.
Yeah.
Coveting isn't necessarily always bad, because when Jesus had a desire, like I was reading this week, just in the sense of Passover week, that Jesus had a desire to have Passover with his disciples, or the Apostle Paul had a desire to be like Christ, or Paul even says to the Corinthians that, I hope that you have a desire for the better spiritual gifts. Having a desire and coveting are two different things. So let's just define what coveting is and just try to make it as clear as possible, so that it can just help us in our own life, in the sense of, do I have these things in my heart that I'm desiring something that is forbidden for me to have? Am I not content? Because whenever you have coveting in your life, you're not going to be content with what you have. And our culture really is built around, advertisement is really built around the idea that we want you to make, We want you to be as discontent as you possibly can so that you feel as though that you need to go out and get more. And our culture also rewards people that have that desire. I'm just hungry for more. I want more. And having desires for things is not a bad thing. But when the desire is rooted in this thing called coveting, it is a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that shift that goes from desiring something to it like taking over everything that I do.
Right.
Right. Like you were saying, that godly desire going after something that I want and that God has put on my heart versus something that is, you know, outward, something that is, you know, materialistic maybe that I am going after that can cause problems.
So coveting, if we can just say, we'll just give a few definitions. Coveting is a desire. We're desire machines, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
Just look at what someone does in their life, what their focus is. That's where their heart lies.
Mm-hmm.
As you are in your heart, so whatever a man has in his heart, so is he.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever a man has his motivation to be, that's what he's going to be focused on and be going after. So desire is really a matter of the heart and its strong emotion. You have emotion in the sense that I need this thing or I want this thing. The desire is rooted in having something, which you don't have, or having more of something. You don't feel like you have enough. But I think where desire and coveting kind of like split is that you desire something that's forbidden. Like with Adam and Eve, that they could eat of all the trees. They had everything that they needed, and God gave that to them. But they went against what God allowed them to have, and they took it in their own hands, and they coveted from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then also, coveting is taking something that doesn't belong to you but belongs to another person. So it's really a selfish desire. It's like we can see in the example of don't covet your neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
Well, desiring a wife is not a bad thing, but desiring your neighbor's wife, which doesn't belong to you, is forbidden.
Yeah.
Therefore, coveting really fuels itself off of the things that are forbidden.
Yeah.
That they can't have, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like there's the red button, don't touch it.
Yeah.
There's something inside of the human heart that wants to say, I want to touch it because it's saying that I can't.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's fueled off of that.
Yeah, like you don't think about stepping on the grass until you see a sign that says stay off the grass.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right, you're
we like, have kids.
Exactly. And I think like that, you know, example of Adam and Eve, like she saw that there was something she was not supposed to eat, and she added her own thing onto it, right? God said we can't eat of it, and we can't even touch it, right? Mm-hmm. So in some ways, that covetousness is part of us as human beings, where we like make it even extra, add the extra forbidden aspect to it, where, okay, God didn't say you can't touch it. He said you can't eat of it.
Mm-hmm.
So like we can do that in our own minds, where we are making it more strict or making it bigger than, you know, the commandment, bigger than what it is. I mean, it is forbidden, like you said, that thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife and those different things. And Jesus, like you said, talked a lot about, you know, the materialistic and how we are supposed to relate to those things that we don't have. And putting the covetousness, we see in scripture a lot where it's like connected with a lot of other things that God is very serious about. Right, we talked about it a little bit already, the Ten Commandments, you know, where, you know, you will have no other gods before me, right? But then also he has, you know, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife. But then also when talking in Ephesians 5, he's listing all these different things about being unclean and being, you know, has these other things in verse 3, the fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, like linking those things together, fornication, uncleanness, and covetousness, like, you know, and then continuing on, filthiness, foolish talking, coarse jesting, these are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. So like connecting all these things that God is very adamant about, very, you know, clear on that we should not do these things, and covetousness is one of those things that, you know, in some ways you could say like, oh, well, that's how I get my desires. I look at other people and I see what, and I go after what I don't have. Yeah, that's great, but also don't let that be overtaking you in order to lead you into these other things that God is super strict about, or has very clear about, that I need to, you know, be careful of myself, because once we get going down that road of, you know, looking at what other people have, you know, we find a good spot and we can stay there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And people do stay there because, you know, it goes quickly from coveting something, going after it and getting it. The satisfaction doesn't last that long at all. Right. And in Luke chapter 12, Jesus talks about that specifically, where the guy, man who had, in verse 16 of Luke 12, he was a rich man and his field yielded plentifully. He thought within himself, what shall I do since I have no room to store more crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and I will build greater, and there I will store all my crops. Like, I covet something, I go after it, I get to that point, and then I realize, oh, wait, that's still not enough. Mm. Okay, well, I need to go after this thing. And I feel like you were saying, our culture is geared around that. It's like, as soon as the new iPhone comes out, people are already, they have it for a week, and then they were like, oh, well, when's the next one come out? Next September, the next one comes out, and I need to see what that's going to be like. And it's kind of a, you know, never-ending cycle of what our lives are, but how can I get out of that cycle, mm-hmm. right? How do I realize, oh, wait, I'll never be satisfied in these material things and building bigger barns and all these things. And Jesus says, right, I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to me, fool, this night your soul has been required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Like, those things that I covet, if they take over my life, and maybe I get some of those things, but what about my soul? Like, how do those covetousness, how does that impact my soul, really? And I think that's something that is maybe sobering to think about. Like, it does impact my soul, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Like, that list that you're reading from Ephesians, mm-hmm. Paul has that same list more or less in Colossians 3. And I find this portion like so interesting, because coveting happens in the human heart. So in Jeremiah 17, we know that the human heart is wicked. It's deceitful.
Yeah.
There's a proverb, I think it's Proverbs 22. It's the lazy man. Mm-hmm. So he's lazy. That's his character. Have you ever heard someone, I have heard someone say, like, I'm just a lazy person. Yeah. But most lazy people don't want to actually admit that they're lazy.
Yeah.
So laziness is like in the human heart, not motivated. I don't have a desire. I don't want to go to work. Mm-hmm. So this proverb says, the lazy man, so the guy who's slothful, says, there's a lion in the street. I can't go outside. So I can't go to work because the lion will devour me.
Yeah.
So the idea of the proverb is, his excuse is so ridiculous, but his excuse is covering up his heart. Mm. So the question is, what's more intelligent, the mind or the human heart? We think of human heart as being motivation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of times people know what they're doing mentally is incorrect.
Yeah.
But their heart is actually in control of their life.
Yeah.
So they'll do something that they knowingly know it's wrong, because mm-hmm. their heart will use their mind to come up with an excuse to ease mm-hmm. like this cognitive dissonance of, I know it's not right, but I'm still doing it. How do I reconcile those two things?
Yeah.
I reconcile it by coming up with an excuse.
Yeah.
So the human heart has, it pumps the mind with vain imaginations and excuses. And the reason why it does that is because it's trying to cover up what its true motivation is. And it even says in Jeremiah 17, the mind doesn't even know the motivation of the heart.
Yeah.
Which to me is, that's amazing. That means that the heart is much actually smarter than the mind. Yeah. It employs the mind. It uses the mind. This is the boss. This is the employee.
Yeah.
And the employee is going to cover up the motivation of the heart. So if someone's going to commit fornication and they know that it's not right for them to do it, because whenever you do an act that's based in coveting or greed or taking something that's forbidden for you to take, you're going to destroy other people's lives because of that decision.
Yeah.
So that's hard to live with. So the mind will come up, or the heart will produce in the mind an excuse or a rationale for why they're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
And so Paul, so just follow this with me, listeners, and if you have your Bibles open, if you go to Colossians chapter 3, starting in verse 5, like Pastor Paul said in the Ephesians section, I think it's the same, pretty close to the same list.
Looks like, yeah.
So if you just look at this, this goes from outward sin, which is fornication. So let's just use, let's just say it's a sexual sin. Let's just say it's adultery.
Okay.
Let's say that a man looks at another man's wife, know that it's not right for him, but he still does it. What's his motivation? Why did he do that? Well, it's fornication is the outward act, uncleanliness. If you go underneath uncleanliness, it's passion. So he has a passion. That passion is coming from evil desire and covetousness.
Yeah.
Which is idolatry.
Yeah.
So idolatry is placing any other god ahead of the true God.
Yeah.
So what do people say in the sense of fornication? My body, my rights. Or who are you to tell me what I can do with my body sexually?
Yeah.
Well, you just made yourself your own God, and you made yourself your own God because if you are a God, you take what you think belongs to you.
Yeah.
Because you're that superior. So Paul takes it from the outward sexual act, let's just say of taking another man's wife, all the way down to the root motivation, which is you love yourself so much and you value your idea of what right and wrong is enough that you've convinced yourself that I want to take that because I deserve it. And that's really the root of covetousness.
Yeah.
Coveting something is the idea that I am so valuable that I deserve this thing, even if God's forbidden it, or I'm going to destroy someone else's life or ruin them or break a relationship based upon my own greed and selfishness. It's really rooted in selfishness.
Yeah.
And Paul is saying, if you look at the other list, he starts from the he starts from the inside and then works out. The first list he starts from the outside, works in.
Yeah.
But I think that's a fascinating thing in the sense of what sin is. Sin is really rooted in idolatry, and it's rooted in covetousness. I don't care what God says, or God hasn't given me and I deserve it and I'm going to take it, even if he hasn't given it to me. I'm going to take it on my own.
Yeah, and that idea of me not, like me being the center of my universe, and I'm going to do what seems best for me, regardless of what anybody else, you know, what the impact it has on anybody else around me, right? It's like this Ezekiel 36:26, you know, new heart, you know, we have a heart of stone as human beings, and we are, you know, a stone doesn't feel anything. It doesn't have any, you know, the things around it don't really impact it. It is the way that it is. And that's what our heart is, like you were saying, guiding our mind in showing us, okay, you need to do this and you need to do that because that's self-preservation, you know, in the self-preservation. I want to do this because this will make my life better. I need this thing because it's going to make my life better. And I think in some ways, like you were saying, we make those decisions and we lead with our mind is doing what our heart says. Our heart is of stone, and our mind, which, you know, is subject to what our heart is telling it, what our heart is leaning it in. But we know in some ways that, okay, maybe this isn't the best. Maybe I shouldn't do this, but I am doing this, and oh, nothing bad happened because I did that. Okay, so now I'll do it again, even though maybe I know. And then we do that so many times that we just, you know, our conscience that's supposed to tell us what's right and wrong is getting scarred and seared, so I don't even feel like this is bad. So then if that thing's not bad, then maybe this thing's not bad either. So then we get down this road, and how am I supposed to get out of that cycle? Like we said earlier, like I am doing things that I maybe used to think were wrong, but, and maybe people are telling me are wrong, but I am just doing it because it's what makes it possible for me to live my life and makes it possible for me to see or even have a life, right? We have this happen in lots of, you know, cities or different places where like, why are things the way that they are? It's because that's the only way that people see that it's possible for them to get to where, get to have a life.
Right.
Like thinking about our city in Baltimore, why are things the way that they are? Because that's, they don't see any other alternative. Like the only way for me to get ahead is to take advantage of the people that are in my own neighborhood, maybe. And I am taking what they have so that I can do what I need to do. And so I can get to the place where I need to get to. And at the expense of other people, I have to do that. And that's the only way that I can make my life happen. And like, I'm the center of my universe and everything revolves around me. And maybe I change that up and maybe it shifts depending on where I am and what's going on. But at the heart, I have no, you know, I have nothing else except this stony heart that needs to be, that doesn't have any feeling about anybody else. And I need to be, it needs to be, you know, taken out. And I need that heart of flesh like Ezekiel 36 talks about.
Yeah. It, again, going back to, I remember being in Africa 20 years ago and being in Ghana and the cars are hysterical. I mean, it's just funny for us, especially living in Maryland, because like every car on the road is like, you know, probably in the last 10 years.
Yes.
They're like newer vehicles.
Yes.
You go up to Pennsylvania, it's a little bit different. You see like 1982 Buicks on the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Our NVA is like, it's a little tighter. But being in Africa, like the what they had, they were so grateful for whatever they had. Because if you had a car, then obviously you were somebody, probably in the status, in the pecking order of whatever their social status is.
Yeah.
But like the cars are like pieced together. It's like a front end of like a Ford, a back end of a Toyota, some Honda wheels or something. But they like loved it. But you take that car here, then obviously you're going to compare it against the cars that are on the road here. And that comparison is going to bring discontentment into your life. So in the States, like we were saying earlier, we have to guard our heart. Like, so, didn't Solomon say, and was it in, oh man, where was it? But he said to guard your heart. That's the key to life, is that we have to guard our heart. Because out of it flow the issues of life. Right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So Solomon, his heart was turned to foreign women.
Yeah.
Right. Which turned his heart away from the true and living God to foreign gods.
Yes.
So this is something, the world that we live in today, we might think that it's just the norm because we live in a, with capitalism. Like if you think about capitalism, it has to be fueled off of discontentment because you need people to buy more and more and more and more. We have Amazon.
Exactly.
I mean, I can be on Amazon. I can just buy whatever I want at any time of the day.
Yeah.
It's always bringing us to a point of discontentment, and we don't even realize it. We think that we're really in charge, but all this stuff is bombarding us, and it's really affecting our heart where we say, I need these other things. And it's ultimately, like you said, human beings just want to be happy. They want to be satisfied. They want peace. The man in the book of Luke, like you read, what did he want? He just wanted to have peace. So he needed to just stockpile his 401k, which in those days was like a barn. And he wanted to stockpile it. So it got to a certain amount where he could say, all right, so you can be at rest and peace. You're good for the next 25 years. And, you know, and Jesus says, you fool, like tonight your soul is required of you.
Yeah.
So as believers, where do we find the contentment? We obviously in God, in Christ. We need to fight it. But I feel like this battle and studying it, Just over the last couple of days, I feel like it's something that we need to talk about, because even the church, we can kind of go soft on it in a certain way. I know I can.
Yeah.
And I know I can give my mind, coming from my heart, can give me excuses for why I should stockpile, because that's the way that the American life is.
Yeah.
But really, my own coveting, in the sense of like keeping back, can withhold the blessing that I could receive from God in the sense of giving, because that's really what He's called us to do,
yeah.
to give to the needy, to give to people that are really struggling, and mm-hmm. to realize my peace and my satisfaction and my joy shouldn't really be rooted in things. I remember years ago, just kind of living simply and being extremely joyful and happy in life.
Yeah.
And it was like I didn't really have that much, so maybe I wasn't comparing it
sure.
with, my life now, because like we live in America, we're extremely blessed.
Yes.
But kind of having like one of these spiritual, epiphanies where you realize, wow, actually life is mostly internal.
Yeah.
Life is mostly internal in the sense that I have a book bag, I have my books, I have my Bible, I have people that love me and care about me. If I have this, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I was living abroad at the time and thinking, when I go back home, and I remember coming back home
yeah.
and seeing all my friends and all of the things that they had, and thinking, man, I'm like a little bit behind because I don't really have anything to my name.
Sure, yeah.
And then you get into the cycle of competitiveness, which is like really applauded in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You're hungry, you're going to go after it.
Yeah.
And you get into this American cycle or Western world cycle, and it's applauded. That's the tricky thing.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, oh, you're smart, you work hard, you save, look at all the things that you have, you're successful, whatever mm-hmm. all that stuff is.
Yeah.
And as believers, we can get sucked into it.
It's true. And I mean, I think in our culture especially, it's like the thing is you're working towards something,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm forfeiting maybe, or I'm, not enjoying what I'm in right now because I'm going to enjoy this thing that I have later.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing that I have, I'm working towards that, and we already said, I'm doing everything I can to enjoy that thing. But what about my experience right now? Like, am I actually able to enjoy my life without, putting everything away, being content where I am and not always looking towards what's going to happen in the future, right? I work for 40 years at my job, and then when I get to the end of that 40 years, I get to retire, right? That's the idea. I get to retire and I move somewhere warm and I can enjoy myself,
mm-hmm.
right? But what if I don't ever get to that point,
mm-hmm.
And I'm never content because I'm always thinking about, well, I need to put this away because that means when I'm 65 or whenever mm-hmm. it is, I'll be able to have a bigger house or a nicer place or whatever. I can't enjoy my life now because I'm so focused on what's happening in the future. And I think like contentment is that idea that we are like the satisfaction that I have and who Christ has made me to be mm-hmm. in my heart is reflected in how I perceive my life. And like you said, a lot of our life is internal and just our perception of what life is. And when I have Christ in my life, I can recognize, okay, these things that I thought mattered before actually don't matter as much as I thought they did. Right? And that example you gave of going to another, like in Africa, they're just happy to have that, or just to be breathing, just to be able to have food on their table. And we're over here like all worried about like, well, what shoes am I going to wear today? Or what clothes am I going to buy? Or whatever it is. And it's our perception really, and where our heart is, like you said, where our treasure is, there will our heart be also. Like, that's an important thing. Out of our heart flows our lives. And how do I recognize those things that are valuable in my life that are not going to fade away, that are not going to diminish or going to, be wood and hay and stubble at the end of my life, and my soul, things that help my soul, the relationships that I build, the people that I have in my life, and the satisfaction that I have in who I am and who God's made me to be. And I think that comes from, in 1 Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, it talks about godliness and contentment is great gain. But earlier on in 1 Timothy, in 1 Timothy 4, verse 7, it says, reject profane and old wise fables and exercise yourself towards godliness. For bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. It's like contentment is not just thinking about my life right now, but thinking about the life that I've been made for, which is my eternal life with Christ and glorifying Him. And that's where I find my contentment, is recognizing God in my life and realizing my life is bigger than just the car I drive or the house that I have or the shoes I'm wearing. My life is about so much more than that, and enjoying it now, my life, and naturally speaking on earth, as if I'm, you know, with the idea that my life is bigger and that my life is really about my glorified body and all the eternity that I'm going to spend with Christ. Like, godliness is not just for me to obey what God has said and to do what He said because He said to do it, but it's because I am doing it because of what He has done and because that's what my life was made for. Mm-hmm. That's who I was made for, and that's how I am meant to live, so that I can know that I am content and satisfied in who He is. Because if I'm not content and satisfied in that now where I am, like, that's what I'm going to be doing for all of eternity, right? Like, is recognizing who God is. So, like, now is like our time to learn and to grow and to be mature in that contentment, and the godliness is kind of linked with that, recognizing who He is, you know. Yes. And that's like the opposite of what we were saying with covetousness, where I take whatever I think is important and put it in the place of God, and I make my life about that thing, and then I realize it's not the thing. Mm-hmm. Then I put something else there, then I realize that's not the thing. Mm-hmm. But when I put Christ in His rightful place, then I realize that's the thing. Mm-hmm. That's what my life is about. And then the rest trickles down. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it starts from the inside in our heart, and then it comes out in the rest of our lives and the things that we do. Yeah. And say, and the life that we live. Right.
The thing that you love the most, you're going to sacrifice the most for. Mm. So we know that as parents,
yeah,
that you love your children so much, therefore you sacrifice. You go out, you work, you earn a living, you do your responsibilities, you sacrifice. I mean, you're a great father, like, you sacrifice for your family. If for you, you're a good basketball player, you love it, you desire to be a really good basketball player, you sacrifice something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that you can go and practice. Like, you're not going to hang out with your friends.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you're going to go. Someone who wants to get into college and they have a desire, they want to get a 4.0, mm-hmm, they're going to sacrifice everything that they have because they value where they're going to be in the future with a 4.0.
Yeah.
So, we're created based upon motivation. So it doesn't change when it comes to our faith.
Yeah.
Because now our motivation, like, if you, people that own a company and they make, let's just say, $10 million,
yeah,
we look at that, we're like, oh, look at that person. Like, where do they get it from? They got it from the fact that they valued having $10 million 20 years ago so much,
yeah,
that they sacrificed it and worked their tail off and gave everything that they possibly could give,
mm-hmm,
so that they could attain that goal.
Yeah.
That's how our heart works. And if they desired that, it could be that it's not a bad desire that they have. They want to be rich.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's like you read in 1 Timothy 6, like, he's talking about, like, Timothy's the pastor in Ephesus, and he's, mm-hmm, saying, hey, Timothy, you got some, Ephesus was like a pretty wealthy city.
Yeah.
Hey, you have some wealthy people in your church. 1 Timothy 6, the context of it is that there's people that are preaching the gospel not for spiritual reasons, but for material reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So he says to Timothy, godliness with contentment is great gain. And then he goes on to say, if someone has a desire to be rich, just, like, warn them, they're going to have a lot of troubles with that.
Yeah.
With that being said, our motivation, because we're motivated people. We want to be motivated. Yeah. I don't want to like live life and just be floating around. I want to have a direction and I want to try to, I want to hit the target, but it's, I need to know what the target is.
Yes. Yeah.
The target is the person of Christ. And we say this so often and someone goes like, I don't understand. I understand if you told me go out and make $1,000 this week.
Yes.
I get that target. But to gain Christ, like what does that mean?
Yeah.
He's a person. You trust him in every aspect of your life. You draw close to him. And when you do that, your heart starts to change and your nature and character start to change. Mm-hmm. Our life right now on this earth is to be sanctified, to be changed in the image of Christ. And that only happens by drawing close to Christ and treasuring Christ and rejoicing in who Christ is and having fellowship with him. Mm-hmm. And then proclaiming that goodness. And to relieve people from coveting, you have to give them something better.
Yeah.
So if they covet money, we have to say Christ is so far better than money.
Yeah.
And they go, well, can that affect me right now? Yes, it can, but it's going to change you and it's going to change your character. And when you get to heaven, you're going to be more like Christ. Like that was Paul's motivation. He was a motivated person.
Yeah.
And in our Christian faith, there's nothing wrong with motivation. It just has to be rooted in Christ.
Yeah.
And when it's rooted in Christ and being conformed into the image of Christ, that's an amazing motivation to have. And with that will come deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me, meaning sacrifice.
Yeah.
But the sacrifice in 1 John 5:3, it's not grievous because I know that I'm working towards something that's eternal and so far greater than me spending my life trying to build a business to make $10 million. If you're called to do that, praise the Lord. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But if you're not called to do it, we're all that. Hopefully that guy has Christ as the focal point of why he's doing it.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing's just going to blow away in the dust. It doesn't really mean anything.
Exactly. And I think like that sacrifice is like the key with the covetousness and the contentment. And just one thing that I was thinking of when we were like studying for this was like thinking about David and Saul and their like viewpoints on what's going on. You know, in 1 Samuel 16, Samuel comes and he anoints David to be the next king of Israel, right? And then David has to live in this time where he knows what he's going to be, but Saul is in the place, he is the king at that time. So putting myself in David's shoes, like how would I deal with him being the king, me knowing I'm going to be the king, and maybe I could look at him, David could look at Saul and say, why is he making all the decisions? God has anointed me king. And we see in 1 Samuel 18 where Saul recognizes David and he ends up being covetous of David, where, you know, the women sing the song of David killed his thousands, or Saul killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And in verse 8 of 1 Samuel 18, it says, Saul was very angry and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s. And then later in the next verse says, Saul eyed David from that day forward. And it happened on the next day that a distressing spirit, maybe covetousness from God came upon Paul. And he, you know, prophesied inside the house, came upon Saul and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music. But this idea that Saul now sees David and he is coveting David, but then there's still this time where Saul is upset with David. He is coveting this position, this recognizing that now David is the anointed one. But then David is still, he has opportunities to act on, you know, maybe if he was covetous, he could have made it for himself, right? He could have said, okay, God, and that would even have been maybe gone along with what God's plan was because he was the anointed king.
Sped it along.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm going to be the king anyways. Why don't I just take advantage of this circumstance? And the mighty men are telling him, God's given you this opportunity. Do what seems right. You know, you're motivated to be the king. Just do this, and then you can be the king that God has given you this opportunity for. And now he's like, cuts the robe. He doesn't kill him. He cuts the robe, and then he's like, why did I cut this robe?
Can it be like with people just as believers that we don't we think we deserve, and we don't have right now, because God hasn't given it to us. So we take it into our own hands.
Yeah.
Right. So would that be like this story with Saul and David, that David could have taken it into his own hands and he had the right to do it because it's a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's true. Yeah. We have, you know, God is in this case, he's a God has promised and made it clear. And I mean, in some ways, thinking about Moses too, God said, I will bring you, you will lead the nation of Israel into the promised land. And then God says, actually, you're not going into the promised land. Right. But then in Moses's psalm, he talks about being like a contentment. He doesn't use those exact words, but he says, like, I have my house is. My home is wherever God is, because God is with me, right? And that can be maybe our mentality and contentment is that, okay, maybe I don't have all the things that these other people have. Maybe I don't, you know, get to spend all my days sitting on the beach in, you know, the Caribbean or whatever it is, but I can know that who God is and I can have contentment in what he has given me and the relationships. And those are like really... when you have those interactions with people, like when you haven't seen somebody in a long time, like, do you really care about what they have or what they have going on? Like what, you know, they can give you, or do you just care about them? Right. You're just there and you have this interaction, this relationship that is based in just that, the people and the relationships that you have. It's not really, you don't really care about what, I mean, you care about them in general as a human being, but it's more than just what they have and what they can give you. Because in covetousness or in that stony heart, I'm always worried about, okay, what can I get from you? And those same people that are looking for other people, they're asking the same questions of, why is this person being kind to me? What do they want from me? Were there strings attached to this relationship when we were made for just this service, this relationship of service, right? Christ came to serve, not be served. Am I content in the sacrifice that I'm making towards other people and able to have those relationships where I'm serving them and loving them and caring about them? And David, I think in this time between him being anointed and him being king, it was that contentment that he had. And we see him fall into like those you know, issues of covetousness later on once he is the king with taking Bathsheba and that whole situation. But also like that timing, you know, then we have the Absalom, when Absalom takes over and he could take out the people that are going against him. Like we see this contentment that he has in encouraging himself in the Lord. Like that's where our contentment is coming from. Us having, you know, that our heart being centered around who God is and who Christ is. And
did you get to see the sight and sound, the David?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't go up and see it?
No.
Oh, so good. So in that, I'm sure people listening, they had the chance to go and see it. But in that, it's like so clear, because like what you just said, like when he didn't have so much, he was content.
Yeah.
And then God gave him victory after victory after victory after victory, to the point that he started to get like so familiar.
Yeah.
That he was now the king. God was giving him all these victories, and he started to think that these victories were really coming from him. It was like derived from him.
Yeah.
So because of that, he felt as though that he deserved something. He deserved something more. And that's where he fell in the play. That's where he fell into the temptation with Bathsheba. Because again, going back, like he commits adultery, he takes, you know, Uriah's wife. And then tries to murder Uriah, and coveting, it's going to go after what it desires, and it's going to be rooted in selfishness, and it's going to be rooted in the fact that I think I deserve this. And in that play, it depicts that. Like, he really felt as though that he deserved that. And coveting can pop its head up in so many different ways. I mean, obviously, we talk about it with the monetary reasons, with money and everything.
Yeah.
But it can be you covet someone else's skill sets. You can covet you can covet someone else's abilities, like athletically or educationally, or someone's personality or whatever it might be. And it usually, like with Saul, it pops its head up with anger and jealousy.
Yeah.
Because you feel as though that you deserve that. Whatever that person has, you deserve it.
Yeah.
And they don't deserve it. I deserve it.
Yeah.
And because of that, you lose the contentment that you have with what God gave you. And now all of a sudden what God gave you isn't enough.
Yeah.
You feel like God is ripping you off. You get that serpent's lie where you deserve more and God's withholding from you. Why did God bless that person so much? And look at you. You start to have pity and all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's really rooted in covetousness because it's, I feel as though that I should have what that person has. Where contentment is rooted in, it's rooted in love, it's rooted in thankfulness, it's rooted in God's grace, realizing that I don't deserve anything. Mm-hmm. I deserve death. And if it was really, if God wanted to, he could just have the mountain just fall right on top of me, but he's given me grace, and whatever he's given me, I'm going to be extremely thankful for. Not to say that I can't desire to have something if it's rooted in him, yeah, in God's time. And it really just boils down to trusting him, because people can be so disappointed with their lot in life and feel as though that other people has such a better life and God's blessed them and they have all the gifts and all the this and that and yeah, whatever it might be. And your life is just living on this natural comparison. It's based upon your ego and your pride, and it's all natural.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get you anywhere.
Yeah.
And with Christ, when you realize, I want to win Christ, and if I win Christ, and I understand who he is and how much he loves me, what he's done for me, how he laid his life down for me, and how he's given me eternal salvation, I will be the most contented person in the new man. And all the outward stuff doesn't affect me so much. That's where true freedom is.
Yeah.
True freedom is not thinking less of yourself. True freedom is not thinking more of yourself. It's about thinking of yourself less. Mm-hmm. It's getting rid in your heart and your mind of what you think you deserve. Yeah. And it's rooted in godly thinking of how great and glorious Christ is.
Yeah.
And when we have that mind, then all of a sudden our life goes outwardly in service and in love because I've received so much, mm-hmm, rather than trying to hoard everything into myself and it's, yeah, all about me. But it's a battle, and it's a sin, and it's sneaky, and we all live there at times, but we don't want to stay there. We want to like speak about what we're speaking about today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that hit it. You know, it's all about what I think I deserve, which is, you know, it's skewed. Mm-hmm. I think I deserve so much when actually I deserve, you know, to die, really. Mm-hmm. And when I think that, when I recognize that, I can be adjusted in a better way to recognizing how grateful I should be that I am not, that I didn't die. You know, that's what, you will not surely die, right? Mm-hmm. That was Satan's lie. It's like, no, you won't die, but you won't get what you deserve either because of God's mercy. Mm. You know, his mercy is there for us to, you know, be able to live and to, you know, be content.
Really. Have you ever seen people that are genuinely happy for you? Like genuinely happy for you?
Yeah.
They're just people that you want to be around.
Yes.
Because they're people that, like, I heard one author say, like, the person who came in fifth can applaud for the person who came in first.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we live. And our ego and our sin nature is so self-centered.
Yes.
That I can applaud the guy in first, but in my heart, I'm like, it's like, mm-hmm, Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, right? Yeah. Like, the guy's the greatest NBA player of all time, and he's, like, throwing darts at everybody that, like, went against them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what self-life is.
Yeah.
Oh, you cross me, or you think you're better than...
I'm going to prove you wrong.
Exactly. And in our sport, we were like, oh, Jordan, he was fueled by hate. How great is he?
Yeah.
And our fuel is not that way. It's Christ. And we have security in who Christ says we are.
Yeah.
Like Paul says to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 4, I don't care if you judge me. I don't even judge myself. I have one judgment, and that judgment's in by God, and I'm declared righteous. I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. But we need to grow in it little by little. But that's really the desire. When you realize spiritually, God reveals it to you, that your life is not based on outward things. It's based on inner truth and realities.
Yeah.
You realize, oh, I'm freed from this rat race, this nonsense that means absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
of I am going to go out and prove the world that I'm a success. When that game's over, you're like, wow, I can live life now. And I'm free from the judgments of my own self or other people or trying to seek approval from man. If I can get to that place where I have the approval from God and I'm rooted in it, you become a very contented, secure person.
Yeah. Yeah, I can be content in whatever state that I'm in, that, yes, you know, whether to be abased or abound, I can just enjoy what God is giving me. And I don't miss when those good things come because I'm looking for God's blessings and I'm seeing his blessings all around me. Mm. Maybe even in things that nobody else sees as a blessing or as, you know, God doing something amazing, and I can find joy and find rest and find liberty in trusting him and knowing that, okay, maybe you don't think this is a big deal, but this is something that he's speaking to me and he's giving me this freedom and this peace and whatever it is that I have going on in my life.
Like Philippians 4, like you just quoted, Philippians 4, the contentment is a learned contentment.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't want to say it's like we're getting to some sort of level of like understanding, but it's a learned behavior. It's a learned life. And how about the person that really does have, you know, sickness, divorce, relational issues, job issues? How can they be content? Maybe we can just end with that. How can that person be content? Because, I mean, ultimately, that's just, no one wants to be there forever.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable. And no one wants to live in a place that's uncomfortable forever.
Yeah.
So what did Paul learn where he could be content with a lot? He could be content even with a little, lost job, relational issue, disease, sickness. Like, what is that? How is he finding contentment there?
Yeah, I think like he's got nowhere else to go except to God. Like his relationship with Christ is the only thing that he can count on in those things. And like his life was, you can imagine him, the transition from being a Pharisee who kills Christians to now being someone who is teaching them. And I think like, yeah, he's learning and growing in his relationship with who Christ is. And, you know, starting from that first time he heard, you know, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Like recognizing my covetousness has been something that's led me in the wrong place. And I am the person that you need to go after. And I think in that he was able to recognize him. And even though he's, you know, in jail or being persecuted or beaten, or like he's doesn't have everything, you know, he's not comfortable by any means. But after he talks about being content in all these things, he says, people quote this verse all the time without the verses that precede it, but he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Mm-hmm. Like I am able to be content because Christ is the one who is strengthening me, but I have to recognize who Christ is in my life. It's not like I'm, you know, thank you, Jesus, live my life. I don't care about anything that you say, and you're going to make all these things happen in my life. I think it's recognizing who Christ is, following in what he has said, not because of it's the thing I have to do, but because I want to get closer to him. And that's what Paul did in order to be content. He's getting closer to who Christ is because he's the source of the contentment. Mm-hmm. And he's the way that I know that I am secure, mm-hmm. that I'm significant, that I have all that I need, that I'm free, and that there's not condemnation for me, but there is a life that's beyond. And because of that, I can do all things. Mm-hmm. I can do whatever it is. I can live my life however God wants me to live. I can live that way because I know he will be with me, and he is the source of all the contentment that I want and the freedom that I have. So,
yeah, the strengthening part, you're drawn to Christ, and he's a person that he's the God-man. He's that person that strengthens the Apostle Paul, even though it's not so comfortable. But when you realize he's the source of unending joy, unending pleasure, unending power, strength, you're drawn to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize, okay, if I have Christ and he's there strengthening me, I can make it through this period of time.
Yeah, and I think like it's, like we said, the outward things, they're going to, like, even some relationships, like we were saying, like you go through a tough situation, but you have Christ with you. And what do I understand who Christ is that can help me understand how to get through whatever that is. Maybe I have a you know, surface level understanding. I know that he has saved me, but do I know all that he is for me? You know, looking at those different attributes that he has and really the work that he's done. Yes, my salvation, which is key, obviously, but also his redemption, his love, his grace, all the things that he has done that make me who I am, and getting closer to that.
So I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me is not that I can surf the biggest wave or get to the Olympics, but it's more that I can endure suffering and I can still be content.
Yeah.
But see, it worked out for Steph Curry, right? Yeah, on the sneakers. So. I can do all things through Christ.
That's right.
NBA MVP, baby.
MVP. Three-time MVP. No,
but that's good. Like in the context, I can do all things, but it's really in the context of, hey, church in Philippi, you guys didn't send me support for a very long time, but God supplied all of my needs in the later verse. But in everything, I can do all things that he's commissioned me and called me to do.
Yeah.
Because he'll strengthen me.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. The suffering aspect of that.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us today. This is a great topic. And I know this week other people are going to be, other pastors and whoever's going to be on here are going to be discussing the subjects. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Be sure to join us for our next show tomorrow, as we talk about contentment and covetousness, or however the discussion goes.
Yeah, I think, what is it? Ambition, zeal, and ambition.
Ambition and zeal.
What they're talking about.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for this time.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Thank you for joining in.